Happy New Year, everybody. How you like that new song? Pat, how do you feel? It's no more smooth jazz here on Off the Bench. New Year, new us.
The smooth that jazz was so iconic to our boatloads of listeners. But I'm upset because I was kind of going to be like New Year, same us, but I just cannot say that now.
No, it's a much different us. In fact, Pat, I've also loaded up like six sounds that we can use now throughout the show.
Little
sound effect. Look, I might remember. We'll see. I'll have them up in front of me for most of the show just to keep my mind fresh. But yeah, you're right. In reality, I'll probably forget all of them. Anyway, everyone listening, everyone watching, thank you for tuning in for our first show of the new year. Happy New Year. I hope you had a safe, happy, healthy day. Pat, did you do anything exciting on New Year's, or you just sleep?
Well, first of all, I'd like to make it known that, like, I am really good at, the game Wordle. Remember that back during COVID? So I had gotten the Wordle. I had gone 714 for 714.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I missed some days in between just forgetting and whatever, but I never missed it. And I got it wrong at, like, 12:15 a.m. to start 2024.
The first Wordle.
And then I went and donated $100 to my local Native American tribe, the Mohegans.
Uh-huh, yep. That's Mohegan a casino, son, by the way, so, folks.
So we're just swinging over already.
Right. Yeah, the Wordle thing was hilarious because if anybody happened to see it on Twitter, Pat posted that he got the first Wordle of the year wrong, and I haven't played Wordle in basically since COVID, probably. Is that when it came out? It was COVID? That's when Wordle started?
I think it was like later 2020.
God, time
flies. At least two years.
Whenever it was, that was when I played it, and I haven't played it really since. I saw Pat got it wrong. I was like, let me tap in. Let me try Wordle out. I'm 2 hours behind Pat due to time zones. I'm in Denver. He's out there in Connecticut, and I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, you didn't get salty? And he's like, no, that was a couple days ago, not realizing it was literally just one day ago. Then I realized what happened, and I waited, and then I did the one that he missed. I did get it right. It was Mural, by the way. But no, that is not an easy one to come up with, in fairness.
Some of the shit that I have gotten correct, though, out of my ass is unbelievable. So to fumble on Mural probably does not bode very well for 2024 for your boy, but I digress.
Well, look, let's hope it's not a sign of things to come. Look, Pat, one thing that is absolutely associated with the new year, just to touch on real quick, is the college football playoff and its subsequent bowl games. They were absolutely electric last night. Did you happen to tap into any of them, or did you pass those by? Because we're not college guys. We don't claim to be, but I checking in.
I was still busy. I wasn't able to watch, but I was following along, and it seems like they're all parties are going to be very happy in terms of the NCAA, ESPN. Yeah. They got lucky. Two really, really good games, especially after just the abomination of the title game last year. And I highly doubt that we'll see a repeat of that. This seems like this is going to be quite the matchup.
No, they were very good games. Michigan Bama was solid, and then Washington Texas, I think, just blew me out of the water. I was amazed. I was falling asleep just due to I'm an old man around halftime, especially since it felt like that halftime was about an hour long. But that game was action packed enough that I did stay up through the whole thing. Michael Penix is an absolute monster. I started picturing him in a Patriots jersey about halfway through that game as well. You know, we'll see if that can transpire here in April in a couple months when the draft rolls around. But yeah, look, as far as I'm concerned, as far as a relatively neutral college football observer is concerned, the good guys won the game. And yes, I know it sounds maybe wrong to call Michigan the good guys considering their cheating scandal, but look, if you root for Alabama and you're not from Alabama, you're an op. That's just the fact of life.
I was gonna say, like, Alabama is public enemy number one literally anywhere but Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Even in other parts of Alabama, they are.
Yeah, I don't care about enemy. I don't care about Connor Stallions or whatever bullshit Michigan did. If you root for Bama, you are an op. So Michigan taking them down, and then Washington taking down the global brand that is Texas, that is generally just the college football version of the Dallas Cowboys. It was good to see. I'm excited for this championship matchup. I hope it's a good game. I hope Penix puts on a show again and can kind of put his any injury concerns that draft evaluators and scouts may have a little bit further in the rearview mirror, because I think that stuff...
I don't think they're going to be in the rearview mirror regardless, unfortunately.
No, I mean... I mean, look, four straight season-ending injuries is definitely tough. I don't
think you can overlook, what, two torn ACLs at age 20, you know, at 24.
It's tough for me, Pat, because it's like it's two torn ACLs, and then it was two different shoulder injuries, one throwing shoulder, one non-throwing shoulder, and it was all in four straight years at Indiana. But then I look at him, and I'm like, okay, he's put together two straight healthy years at Washington now, and he obviously isn't worse for wear due to any of those injuries. No. He's playing like the best quarterback in college football. So
the talent is there, undoubtedly. I mean, he might be like the third most talented quarterback in this coming class. Is he going to be the third quarterback off the board? I highly doubt it, but sure. The talent's clearly there. It's just going to be a matter of, like, you know, do teams get spooked by this?
Yeah, he's a guy that I'd be very excited if you know, my team ended up with him either in the late first or early second or whatever it was. Patriots projected to pick around pick, you know, 2, 3, or 4. I think that would obviously be a bit of a reach, but regardless, super electric player, super fun to watch. And I'm a big Michael Penix fan now, because as somebody who doesn't like when injuries kind of are the entire narrative around a player, because I think it's something players can more often than not come back from unless it's a degenerative thing, I'm just rooting for the kid because he's so fun to watch. Seems like a good dude. And the resilience that it takes to get back to where he got after all those injuries, I mean, that's impressive enough from an NFL evaluation standpoint. I mean, that's a dude you want leading your team, in my opinion.
Get ready to learn Las Vegas, buddy.
Oh God, he's gonna need to learn to speak slot machine. All right, well, to
speak Top Golf, man.
But yes, the college football bowl games were great. And the only other thing I want to mention about the college football bowl games is I had a few people saying, oh, the committee is vindicated, they made the right call because of how great these games are. I still just could not disagree anymore. Like, the way these games played out, for me, have no bearing on whether the committee got it right or whatever. Like, yes, I'm glad the games were great. Obviously, they entertained me, somebody who doesn't tune into college football all that often. But what I hate about college football and how the committee did things is just, it's the only sport in the United States, as far as I'm aware, that you cannot earn your way in with what you did during, like, throughout the season. Like, I understand it'd have to be different from professional sports because college conferences by nature have different competition levels, so you need some kind of committee to, like, evaluate differences between those and find a middle ground, right? But even in, like, college basketball, which is notorious for the committee and for Selection Sunday and all that, it's like, at least even there, everybody who wins their conference tournament as a D1 team gets their shot at the postseason, whatever way that may be. They get to be in the postseason. College football not allowing teams to do that, i.e. Florida State, drives me nuts.
And at the end of the day, in college basketball too, like, those teams that do get snubbed are realistically, what, maybe the 50th best team in the country? Maybe, yeah. So, like, you're not missing out on too much. It's so tough with Florida State because I understand why they did what they did in terms of the entertainment factor, but obviously they insist that that doesn't play a part in it. Mm-hmm. But, like, somebody asked me, like, if I truly think Florida State is a better team than Alabama, and even right now, well, right now, obviously no, but even with Jordan Travis, like, the answer is still probably no, but from a resume standpoint, it's just really tough to win a major conference, go undefeated mm-hmm. in a major conference, no matter how mid the ACC was, and to not get in, it's just a tough, it's going to, ultimately, it's going to be the undoing of the ACC. Any teams that give, you know, Florida State, Clemson, they're going to bolt. These schools are bolting as soon as they possibly can. If, you know, obviously if Florida State had done it a little more impressively, then they'd be in. But it's just funny how everyone was dunking on it after that Georgia game because, like, they were playing all their third stringers. Like, of course they got their fucking shit rocked. Yeah. Like, what do you expect? Like, that is not indicative of a team season. I assure you, had they been in the playoff, they would have had, you know, 90% of those guys that weren't playing would have been playing. So, but at the end of the day, it worked out. I don't think it vindicates the committee whatsoever, but at the end of the day, but yeah.
For me, it's just, I don't care who the better team is. Like, and that may sound silly. It's like, oh, don't you want the four best teams? No, I want the four teams that earned their spot. Like, we didn't, what was it, last year, the Vikings with their fraudulent season or whatever, because you kept comparing me to them. We didn't give the Vikings a worse seed than their record said just because they didn't really pass the eye test. Like, that's just not, I think it's a detriment to competition.
That's,
I think,
the problem with such an open, with such open-ended requirements. You know, there really are no requirements. You know, they could pick whoever the hell they wanted. And this move to 12, I'm going to be honest. Well, maybe this year has changed it, but like, I fucked with the BCS final because we have seen so many time after time, there's probably not four worthy teams of making this four-team playoff, and you've seen situations where semifinals or the finals somehow are a huge blowout. And but I guess the move to 12 this year would have been the perfect year because there were a lot of really good teams. But yeah, it's just tough when you are that ambiguous and that small of a field.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a thing that is going to by default be mostly solved by going to a 12-team playoff. So I still believe right now that the committee was like, fuck it, we can kind of just do whatever we want for this one because it's changing next year anyway, and we will have a little bit more of cut and dry requirements for teams to get in the playoff. It's what, the five highest ranked conference champions and then seven wild cards essentially, which is at least a step up. So
I do think there, I do think a group of five school. I do think the highest ranked group of five school also.
Oh, is there?
I could be wrong. So okay. Liberty would have been in the playoff this year.
Or excuse me, it's the five highest ranked conference champions. So if there's not, so Liberty would, I think, qualify for that because there wouldn't be a conference champion ranked higher than them from, say, the Big. I guess there must be. There would be five higher than them. Whatever it is, it's definitely going to be an improvement. So I'm excited to see it. But guys, this is not a college football podcast, but it's just simply the biggest thing going on right now, other than your fantasy football championships, which have hopefully all come to a close. So what this episode of Off the Bench is going to be is a bit of a wrap up on the fantasy football season. Pat and I are going to hand out some awards here in just a few seconds. Actually, MVP, Bust of the Year, Best Draft Value, and many other awards. Well, a couple other awards. And we're also going to go over our best and worst takes from the season and who we think is going to make the playoffs based on the scenarios that face us heading into week 18? Week 18. Yeah. Sorry, I always lose track because of the bye, whether it's 17 or 18 week season. 18. And let's get into it, Pat. But first of all, congratulations to all of our champions. And I just want to shout out to all the guys who popped off for you guys in your championship games. These performances on championship week were wild. We had a lot of guys pop off and I'm sure lead teams to a ring almost single-handedly. I actually had a league where I faced like two of these guys that I didn't care much about, but I was like, oh, cool, I'm just dead before it even begins. But CeeDee Lamb, 40.2 points in PPR leagues. Devontae Adams, of all people, 37.6 points. Lamar Jackson, 36.3. DJ Moore 30.9 and Kyren Williams 30.1. All those guys, if you had any of them, I mean, honestly, most of them did pretty well for you all season, save for Devontae Adams. But if you somehow made it to the ship with Devontae Adams, that man saved his best for last. So shout out to him.
Another big shout out. Amon-Ra St. Brown was the only non-quarterback to score 20 or more PPR points in the 3 weeks that most leagues are playing their tournaments, their championships in. So, they didn't. He didn't quite have the number popping, but consistent, solid. Man, he's a stud. There, I think that. Now, I don't need. Why are we going? I don't need to go on an Amon-Ra St. Brown tangent here, but he's just a bona fide stud now. There is no doubt about that.
No, Amon-Ra St. Brown, especially. Happy to announce. I don't know if we mentioned this, Pat, on the pod before, but with our league being non-PPR, we are moving to half PPR next year. So a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown will be even more in demand in that league.
Thank
That's a surefire first round pick. Like, I wouldn't even blink if I selected Amon-Ra St. Brown in the first round. That feels like as safe a pick as you can get, whether or not Ben Johnson ends up, you know, hightailing it out of there for a different job. He's just such a high volume, talented player. Pat, speaking of guys who led, you know, people to league championships, how did you fare in your leagues that you survived? Did you come away with any ships this year or anything that's still going on?
Championships. I actually didn't even make any finals, but
oh dear. Okay.
Fortunately, the highest stakes league that I was in, I came in third place, and somehow the prize for third place covered about 85% of my league dues in all of my leagues combined.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So at the end of the day, like, and I know, and I realized it on like Saturday. I was like, wait, I'm like, there's a payout for this. And I plugged in the Texans defense, who had like, I believe like 19 points, which, and of course would have beaten both the finalists. I think I had like 175 PPR points. My team just went ballistic, but I don't care, you know, it's not being in the finals. It was nice to, one, be invested and to actually come away with a decent return on investment. I expect to lose all of my money playing fantasy football. The fact that I ended up, it ended up costing me about $25 to play in five fantasy football leagues, cool with me.
Yeah, we pay for the love of the game. In my two NFL.com leagues, one of which I was competing for the first overall pick next year, I did win that, so I will have the first pick, not just in the first round, but in every round because it's not a snake draft. So that'll be a fun little handicap to give really your boy nice. Next year. That'll be a good one. And then in my viewer/follower league, I did end up blowing out, I believe it was FPS Gandhi, if that's actually him. I can't, because his name's not the same in that league as it is on here. But
Based on the chat, it seems like it's him.
I ended up thwapping him 155-97. So thanks to Kyler Murray, Breece Hall, Von Achan, Deebo Samuel, Puka Nacua, Nico Collins, Brandon Aubrey. Shout out to all those guys. No shout out to Travis Kelce. I did everything in spite of Pat, these were my first few picks in that league. Mahomes, Kelce, and Derrick Henry comprised my first couple of picks in that league. And I just, I'm him, so what can I say? Our league, I guess. But yeah, look, those guys definitely all in contention for bust of the year, Pat, which we will get to in a few seconds. But let's start off with a little bit of positive, all right? These are our fantasy football awards for the 2023 season, many of which we agree on, a couple of which we don't. But one we do agree on, Pat, is the fantasy MVP of the season.
Everyone should agree on it.
There's a really, quite literally, no other direction to go, and it is Christian McCaffrey. Pat, I was honestly awestruck when I sorted on a PPR league that I have to see what he's doing in PPR leagues, because I haven't kept track of that super well this year because we're not in PPR. Christian McCaffrey has over 120 more points than the next closest running back, which is Travis Etienne. I didn't realize it was that bad.
It's insane how good he was, and obviously when you think in real sports leagues, the MVP value doesn't matter necessarily, but fantasy football, I think it does, where the guy gets drafted. McCaffrey could have been drafted first overall, which is probably where he should have been regardless, and he's the MVP.
No question.
Because Tyreek Hill's pretty good. He went later. Who cares? No. McCaffrey was just that damn good. And to go two fantasy seasons, rip, completely healthy in a row, debunking the injury-prone label on him. I'm sure next year when everyone and their mother takes him first overall, maybe something will happen. But this guy was just that good. His touchdown, I saw one of his touchdown props, anytime touchdown, minus 150. Minus money for an anytime touchdown.
Guarantee the guy finds the end zone.
Yeah, and it's silly. He didn't get it, I believe, right? No, I think because he got hurt,
this
right?
past week, no, he didn't. Yeah, no, 14 Elijah carries Mitchell, for 64
Elijah
yards.
Mitchell,
yeah.
I saw Mitchell get one of them, but even whether he got it or not, to go into a game with minus odds to score an anytime touchdown is crazy. It's just a perfect combination of the best offense in the NFL and the best non-quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, and I mean, to have such a positional advantage with him, too. When you drafted Christian McCaffrey, or when you draft any running back or receiver, you're not expecting them to be far and away this huge positional advantage over everyone else at their position. You're just hoping that he's one of the top, three scorers, or maybe he's the top scorer by 10 or 20 points. I mean, this dude was providing a Kelce-esque positional advantage, Kelce of the past, and it's just
at running
an absolute monster. Yeah, there was something ESPN put out. It was 60% of teams with Christian McCaffrey made their championship or something like that, and I was oh my god, that doesn't even feel real. Shout out to Brett in our league who didn't make it with Christian McCaffrey, but we digress. Christian McCaffrey, the undisputed MVP. I mean, there's not even really any players super worth an honorable mention, but I did throw one in here just for posterity's sake. Cowboys kicker Brandon Aubrey, if you want to talk about positional advantage, this kicker dude, number one, and he has 21 more points than the next closest kickers, which are Justin Tucker and Jake Elliott, both tied with 151. Brandon Aubrey, 172. I mean, he was on a ton of championship teams.
Yeah, now my question about Brandon Aubrey, does he finally break that Justin Tucker seal? Is he kicker one next year, or are people still going with old reliable and Justin Tucker? I mean, neither of them are going to be me doing it, so I don't care. But right. I feel it's still got to be Justin Tucker, just because what he's done this for, a fucking decade by now.
Yeah, I think it'll still be Tucker, but Aubrey's probably going to be ranked there, right somewhere in the top three.
Well, it should be number two.
Yeah, well, after, I mean, honestly, Jake Elliott, I can understand as well, just because being attached to that offense and also having several years under his belt versus just one. But yep, those three should absolutely comprise the top three kickers next year. After that, you get into the Dustin Hopkins and the Harrison Butkers and the Jason Myers, who are, you know, good kickers, but are guys who have been up and down the total scoring list. And kickers are so volatile from year to year anyway, other than Justin Tucker.
I do expect they themselves are not stupid. I'm sure there are some stupid ones, but the fact that kickers are in fantasy football is a little bit stupid. But yeah, shout out Brandon Aubrey. But in terms of the MVP, the only guy like realistically in the same sentence is Tyreek Hill, and he was really good, but McCaffrey was just that damn good.
Well, and Tyreek Hill is no longer even wide receiver one in PPR leagues because of CeeDee Lamb 2 weeks. So it's kind of it's tough to make him the MVP anymore. Just, you know, he looked like he was well on his way to that through about 14 weeks of the season. But then this is what happens when you split hairs of the MVP. It's happening in the real MVP as well. Lamar Jackson's going to lock it up just because Christian McCaffrey had a singular down week and because Tyreek Hill has, you know, been banged up here and missed a game. So it's a game of inches, folks. We know this. And in that game of inches, Christian McCaffrey is at least taking home the fantasy football MVP. Now, on the other end of the spectrum,
bust of the year.
Ugh, God, blew out a vocal cord. Okay,
make the one who's not the singer sing on this podcast.
Exactly, and I got to hit the high note. At least my mom's a singer. All right, bust of the year. We do differ on this one. My pick is Travis Kelce. It's a guy, look, I'm not going to come on this pod and say, I told you so about him, because I wasn't completely against Travis Kelce. Yeah. Anybody who asked me, should I take Travis Kelce in the first round? I was like, look, I don't think it's a bad pick. It's just not for me. Turns out I should have been maybe a little bit harder on that stance that no, you shouldn't. This was the year that Travis Kelce, after so many years of being solid and being just a reliable, like, early to mid second round pick, people were like, look, he's been good for too long. He's tied to Patrick Mahomes. He should be a first round pick, at least in PPR leagues, which again is 90%+ of leagues at this point. I looked at it and saw it's a non-running back, non-receiver position, and it's an older player. And yes, trying to predict an age fall off before you've seen even a remote sign of it happening is a risky proposition and can make you look like a little stupid. And Pat, honestly, I don't know if age was a huge part of it or if it was just lingering injuries all year that have made him this way. But Travis Kelce has unequivocally not returned value. And the fact that you spent that early pick on a non-running back receiver and that's the position that didn't return the value, that's the problem.
Exactly. That's the whole reason why he was a first-round pick, because it was that slam dunk of value. And it's crazy we're sitting here, you're calling the bust of the year the guy that was 6 points away in PPR formats from still being the tight end one. But whether that's true or not, the value, the return on value is not that. It is not that. The whole point of it was you're getting such a big positional advantage and you weren't getting any advantage. You know, obviously it was a down year for him, but it was kind of just I don't even want to say a mid-year, because it really was just a down year for him. Guy still goes out and scores, you know, what, like 200-something fantasy points it is. So, like,
yeah,
I think 219, something like that. So he's not my pick. You know, I'll preface it with this. So the guy that won our league this year traded up to the first overall pick and picked this guy, who I'm about to name bust of the year. And yet, he still managed to win our league. Sadly, he is near and dear to our hearts, but my bust of the year is Austin Eckler.
Yeah,
it's just
understandable.
RB 25 in total points. And even in a per game basis, to average 22 points per contest. So, like, but, you know, I didn't call him touchdown dependent when we interviewed him. I asked him, you know, what he thought about people calling him touchdown dependent. Yikes. You know, the touchdowns are not coming. And the other thing is that the Chargers were just a significantly worse offense than we all anticipated them to be this year. Injuries and, you know, incompetence in the coaching staff. And it just was not happening for the Chargers to put Eckler in a position to, you know, be at the goal line as often as he was. And he's not even the best pass catching running back anymore. He's not even close. I mean, Christian McCaffrey is a sure thing. So I'm curious where he is going to go in drafts next year. I haven't really given thought to it, but, like, with his age and with his performance, and, you know, who knows what the Chargers makeup is going to be next year, but, like, I don't think he's a first round pick. Like, I think he might be, like,
I don't think he's even close.
Like, maybe in the second. I think it's all going to depend on who they bring in as their new head coach, who's their new offensive coordinator.
It's going to depend on if Austin Eckler's on the Chargers as well.
That's true.
I mean, there's a very strong chance he's not.
You know, people always like to, if he is back on the Chargers, people always like to glaze on the Chargers every year. I mean, we did it. I went back and listened to some of our old streams to, you know, see some of our best and worst takes. And God, Justin Herbert this and Keenan Allen. Well, not even Keenan Allen.
I need Charger rehab. Charger rehab. I believe in this team too much every year.
And it's bad. If he's still there, I mean, it's going to depend on where he is. But the age combined with his performance this year has not only knocked him out of like a top five pick, but maybe not even a top 20 pick, which is crazy. And I mean, for what, not only in value, it would have been bad, but it just was not a good year for a first round pick. And in some instances, you know, I hope in our league, he got taken before Christian McCaffrey. I really hope he didn't in a lot of other leagues, but like, for example, you could have gotten Tyreek Hill, who in PPR leagues was, you know, probably going around like sixth or seventh. You could have. I bet there were a lot of leagues where Austin Eckler got picked over Tyreek Hill, and I bet you were, or CeeDee Lamb, and I bet you are absolutely furious if you did that.
Yeah, let me do the math here really quick. I know one of the big things that is obviously thing raising Austin Eckler's floor were those receptions, right? And it was something that took a dive with Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator. So this year, Austin Eckler averaged, if I'm doing my math right, let's see. That's receptions. No, it's not. 66. Targets divided by 13 games. That is 5.07 targets per game. Last season, he had 127 targets in 17 games. That is 7.5 targets per game. So a significant dip. And it's one of those things, Pat, that illustrates a rule that I don't perpetuate too much to the public because it just sounds paranoid and it can in ways hurt your evaluation of players. But it's like, be paranoid and don't be too careful with players. Like, you could simply look at Austin Eckler from last season to this season before any of the injury stuff took place and say, oh, he just had an incredible season and the offensive coordinator under which he had that incredible season is gone. It's that simple. Like, and that's not to say it's going to tank his value. Nobody would have predicted such a far end outcome like this, but it's like similar with Ramondre Stevenson on the Patriots as well.
Yeah.
Received far less targets when they changed offensive coordinators. So when you see a guy get such a massive workload and everything runs through him, and then that team changes something, anything relating to the offense, an alarm bell should go off in your head that, okay, that season was probably his absolute ceiling, and we're not going to see anything as close to that. He could still be good. Again, I still expected Austin Eckler, even if he got 40, 50 less targets this season, to be at least an RB1. But it's just one of those things that if you are really trying to make the absolute safest picks possible in the first few rounds, which I personally do try to do, that's the kind of player you avoid. Like, next year, I'm going to go after players who are just have nothing change, or if they have something change, it can't be interpreted as anything else but positive. Like Bijan Robinson, for example, if they get rid of Arthur Smith and bring in a new head coach and a new offensive coordinator, everyone and their mother knows there's literally nowhere for Bijan to go but up, right? And or you could look at a player like, I don't have the rankings up, let's see, who are the top players? Christian McCaffrey, obviously, super safe player, other than maybe some tread on the tires. And then just any player who had a good year and has a stable sort of offensive coordinator and head coach around them, those are the players you want, that you don't have to worry about things changing just for the sake of them changing around that player.
See, yeah, I think the trap people fall into is like clear upgrade. You know, in theory, Kellen Moore was a clear upgrade. Who was it? God, Joe Lombardi.
OC.
And then, like you even said, in New England, going from fucking Matt Patricia to Bill O'Brien. In theory, those are upgrades. So we just think that, like, oh, these offenses are going to be so much better. So obviously that output is going to keep up. But in terms of, you know, the offenses may have gotten better. Like, that may have been true. It really wasn't. But, like, you know, it could have very well been true, but it doesn't necessarily benefit
a guy player.
Like that. Especially when it comes to running backs who are not dependent, but, you know, very booned by catching the ball. So, I mean, we'll see next year. You know, God, it's going to come quick, I'm sure. But we'll see what happens next year with some of these similar guys in that archetype that are kind of going in this late first, early second kind of mold where it's like, is there a change here? Like, is this still really in the cards?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you who I'm already tentatively, at least slightly worried about, is Jahmyr Gibbs, because I think Jahmyr Gibbs is going to enter that first-round conversation after what he's done here from basically week seven on. And assuming Ben Johnson does go find another job, it could shake things up in a way that's unpredictable. Jahmyr Gibbs is still a young, talented player. He's still going to get his, and he's still going to be solid. But it's like, is he going to reach that sort of ceiling outcome with likely less creative play calling?
Less creative play calling, but you've seen Ben Johnson just have an absolute hard-on for the David Montgomerys and the Jamal Williams.
That's true, too.
So, you know, they could get a new offensive coordinator that is going to say, like, hey, we've got this great young piece. We're going to use him. They can move in the other direction. But I don't know that for sure, because we know that Dan Campbell also loves the David Montgomerys of the world. And, you know, who knows how much, you know, real input he'll have in that. But it does pose a good point that people are going to have to think about with the Lions, because there's, you know, Amon-Ra as well. I think that's going to be more of a Jared Goff shits his pants occasionally and just throws the ball to Amon-Ra because he's there. I don't think that's necessarily going to change, but like, that's another one where you're like, oh, like that offense is still so good, but there could be that change there that could, Gibbs does seem to be the prime candidate for that to happen.
Well, when you look at, you know, the top scoring offenses in the league in terms of points per game, right? You've got the Miami Dolphins, who have great coaching and just electric weapons around them. You've got the Ravens, who have future MVP Lamar Jackson and past MVP Lamar Jackson. The Cowboys, who have a ton of weapons. The 49ers, who have just great coaching and probably the best group of skill players combined in the NFL. And then you've got the Lions. So the Lions, again, very good weapons between Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Sam Laporta. But I would argue Jared Goff is probably, I mean, look, Brock Purdy's not insanely exciting either, but the least exciting quarterback among those top scoring offenses, at least. And once a guy like Jared Goff, who I think is a little bit more unspectacular of a playmaker, once that guy loses a guy like Ben Johnson, it worries me about the offense as a whole. Yeah. The reason the two running backs like Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery have both been able to be productive for most of this season is because there are so many scoring opportunities to go around. Yeah. You remove some of those scoring opportunities, it gets dicier. So it's just something to watch. Ben Johnson may not leave. It just, he seems like the most sought after coordinator. So it seems like just it's probably going to happen.
I, you know, I kind of get why he didn't leave this past year. Like, 'cause, you know, still a little inexperienced. What else does he have to gain? Like, he has, he might be the top candidate, probably besides Jim Harbaugh, who knows, you know, what his intentions actually are in terms of moving to the NFL. But at least in terms of NFL coaches, he's the hottest commodity. He could go wherever he wants to go. He could go to the Chargers with Justin Herbert and you know, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen. What with the Chargers glazing, that could be.
Oh boy,
that could be back.
I am ready. I'm ready to find any reason to renew my Chargers optimism. Let's run it.
He can go wherever he wants, and it does seem like there will be some intriguing options out there. So, I do expect there to be that change in Detroit.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one to watch for sure. But let's move on, Pat. Let's get to our best draft value of the year. And I think this one was also a little bit inevitable. We both agreed here, and it is the one, the only, Raheem the Dream Mostert. And what else can you really expect from a guy who, let me pull up his Fantasy Pros ADP here, looks to be 130, if I have this correct. 130 on average in That's PPR leagues. Yes, that is 11th round in 12-teamers, obviously 13th round, I think, in 10-teamers. And this is a guy who finished as the RB3 on the season. Other than a brief scare early on when Devon Achane was emerging and we thought Mostert, you know, in his age might take a back seat, this guy was pretty much as consistent as they come all season long. We had a few less of the highs as the season went on, but he was still just rock solid.
Well, that's the thing, and I think he wins this. Like, he may not be, like, the best value, but in terms of guys drafted, because we're going to talk about a couple of the bigger values in our waiver pickup, but that's the thing is, more often than not, some of these other guys are getting picked up on waivers. Mostert was getting drafted, and the value was unbelievable. And another kind of just another reason why you should do your draft as late as possible.
Yeah.
As late as humanly possible, because I draft in the one league I drafted Mostert, it was like the day Mike McDaniel had that wishy-washy comment about Jeff Wilson.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, Jeff Wilson's on IR. And I took Mostert in the 11th round.
Yep.
So, but to get that kind of value, and it's crazy that we were all scared of, it was Jeff Wilson that was making people kind of take Raheem Mostert, like, oh, no, Jeff Wilson? When in reality, it was Devon Achane who should have been scaring people away from Mostert, but nothing should have been scaring people away from Mostert because, again, he's, despite being ancient, what is he, 30? Like, ancient yeah. running back years.
31, I think, 31.
In a top scoring offense with just ample scoring ability. And yeah, Achane took some, but at the end of the day, that's, you know, Mostert's thing is that he can get into the end zone from the 1 yard line. So the stars aligned, everything really worked out. And for you to get, what, like the RB3 on the season in PPR scoring in the 11th round. And it's not like just, you know, you threw a dart, like, oh, you know, close your eyes, throw a dart, maybe this guy will be good. Like, no, this was somewhat calculated. Like, there was this yeah. path for this to happen all along.
He was their lead back at the time you drafted him. I mean, if it was as long, assuming you drafted within a couple weeks of the season starting, you knew he was their lead back. You just didn't know what exactly that meant from a percentage point of how much work he was going to get. Turned out, from the initial standpoint, it was all of it. And then Devon Achane came in and turned in, you know, a decent handful of touches into just some of the most absurd production we've seen. But Raheem Mostert, yeah, look, I give Raheem Mostert credit for being the only reason my team's ship didn't completely sink after Nick Chubb went down. I mean, if I didn't have this guy, my running backs would have been me and you. So I absolutely an incredible value pick and the kind of guy that you should be targeting in drafts in the future. Look, easier said than done. Just go ahead and identify the next Raheem Mostert in the eighth round. But guys who you can envision getting a decent amount of work, especially on a good team, those are guys you invest in. Pat, before we get to the honorable mention, I just want to mention this. How much of an interesting draft debate is it going to be next year, assuming the Dolphins don't change anything in their backfield? 31-year-old Raheem Mostert coming off a 20-plus touchdown season, mm-hmm. or young Devon Achane, banged up several times this year. Where do they both go next year? Like, that is going to be the most interesting debate.
But at least, like, you tell, ask me right now, I have to pick one of them right now, I'm picking Devon Achane.
Really? Okay. Yes, I almost just expected you to say Mostert.
We talked about the age, we talked about the explosiveness. That said, I wouldn't do it particularly high. Mm-hmm. You know, would I want Devon Achane to be one of, like, my locked-in starters? Probably not. Like, that's the thing. It's like, this is such a talent and such a good offense. So both of these guys' ADP is going to get inflated by that. But it's like, what are we talking, like, third round, fourth round, fifth round? Like,
yeah,
it's going to be really wild. But, like, you know, we've talked about, you know, some of these aging running backs. And Mostert has had an injury history. Granted, again, stayed very healthy this year. But we could see it in the way that, hey, Achane can do what Mostert can do, and Mike McDaniel is going to go with his young, shiny new toy. With Old Reliable still on hand, but
yeah, with that offense, with how much, you know, how big of a pie there is to separate among the players, I do feel fairly good about Devon Achane. I will say he has a bit of a slighter build, right? I mean, honestly, I feel like he's as much an injury risk as anybody, even though I don't like to assign the injury risk title to anybody. So
Mostert's got pretty good size too, though.
Yeah, so let's see. Devon Achane listed 5'9", 187 here, and then Mostert's probably pushing, what, 220, if I had to guess. Tends to be what those kind of guys are at. Wikipedia, don't let me down. 5'10", 205. So, I mean, an extra inch and an extra almost 20 pounds.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know if Devon Achane's build is part of why he suffered all these injuries, but also, look, another full offseason in the NFL, not your rookie offseason, no less. That's plenty of time and a good opportunity for him to kind of right the ship on some of that stuff, or at least as much as he can. Considering, Pat, that I have basically blown my third round pick what feels like every fucking year for the last decade, I think Devon Achane I'd be pretty comfortable taking in the third round if he's available. Like,
yeah, I think I think you're realistically getting possibly first round upside. Like, if something would happen to Raheem Mostert and Achane is the guy and that offense is as good as it, and there's no reason why it wouldn't be as good again next year. That could be fool's gold. And on the same hand, if something were to happen to Achane, we could be sitting here next year talking about Raheem Mostert again as the value pick of the year. So it's going to be really interesting to see. That's probably the most interesting backfield heading into the offseason here, because you've got two guys who can probably coexist similarly to maybe not quite as good as Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery did, but who could probably coexist to some extent, but yeah, that's going to be that is going to be quite the talking point as we get closer to next year.
I think with the hype that will certainly surround a guy like Achan and the flashes he's shown this year, I'd be pretty surprised if he survived beyond the third round next year. Honestly, I wouldn't be super shocked if a lot of people reached on him with their second round pick. Sort of a not a Travis Etienne, you know, sort of ADP, because Etienne had the job a little more to himself. People were worried about Tank Bigsby, but whatever. But, you know, around that sort of where he was going in the draft. Yeah, shout out to our boy Tank Bigsby. Honorable mention here for best draft value to Sam Laporta. Drafted even later than Raheem Mostert, I believe. His ADP was 163. And he finished as the tight end one. So shout out to you Kelce owners spending a first on him. We could get Sam Laporta at 163rd overall, who's going to outscore Kelce by 6 points. So we may be looking at next year's tight end one. I'll be curious to see if the rankers are willing to go that far. But again, the Ben Johnson argument, right? If he leaves, who knows where that leaves things. Sam Laporta, certainly a massive breakout candidate this year. Massive breakout this year, for sure. Pat, rookie of the year. We are once again in agreement, and this is one that, if not for injury, I would have gone a different direction, but it's Puka Nacua. There's really no other way to go about it.
Puka Nacua.
Yeah, the guy is about to break the single-season rookie receiving record. Granted, yes, with an extra game, but he's still well-deserved. He's already
broken the rookie total yards, thanks to some some end-arounds and creative timely rushing plays for him. He's already passed Jamar Chase's record for total yards. But yeah, he's going to pass it. Oh, one extra game. Who cares? There's an extra game now. Like, there used to be like nine games 100 years ago. Like, who cares? I do not
care. We got to get over it.
And the reason why we don't consider Puka best value is most likely you didn't draft him. And if you did draft him, he was not getting drafted in enough leagues to have any kind of ADP. Yeah, I'm interested. Yeah, check dial up Fantasy Pros. Let's see what his ADP is.
293. Which is undrafted in every league.
That's very undrafted. Because come on, math. Whoa, isn't there 192 picks in a 12-team, 16-round draft? Yeah, that's 192. That's not even close. So he's not even close to being drafted. So go from there to being a bona fide wide receiver one, there were some down weeks, but unless you had a lot of good options, you were most likely starting Puka Nacua every single week. And the fact that we talked about receivers breaking out later in the year, like it happened. Amon-Ra St. Brown is one of them as a rookie. We see it time and time again. This happened week one. Like week one, right out of the gate, if you had the number one claim, you were claiming Puka. And for him to be wide receiver 5 on the season, and to really devalue Cooper Kupp, who was entering the preseason as at worst the wide receiver 3, granted before his injury, but he was being drafted as the wide receiver 3 in a lot of instances, and to render Cooper Kupp as more of a flex play is nuts. Is absolutely nuts. And I'm interested to see. It seems like Sean McVay is going to be back on board next year. Matthew Stafford should be there. He loves the kid. I see no reason why the Puka train is not going to keep moving.
Yeah, Puka Nacua providing basically the biggest competition for Cooper Kupp, since his emergence, is certainly an upset. Cooper Kupp playing alongside guys in the past like, Robert Woods put up a very nice year alongside him. He's played with Allen Robinson before we knew that Allen Robinson was totally cooked. He's played with Odell Beckham. None of those guys cut into Cooper Kupp as much as Puka Nacua did.
As this kid from BYU.
Yeah, who saw this coming? The Rams being so much better than, honestly, Pat, Matthew Stafford being so much better than we thought he would be is really what drove the Puka Nacua and another player we're going to get to here for a different award in a second.
Who could it be?
Yeah, I know. Who could that be? We're about to talk up, I can't think of an irrelevant
Ronnie
Ram.
Rivers.
Bryson Hopkins. I think he's still there. Yeah, he's going to win an award. But no, Puka Nacua, absolutely the fantasy rookie of the year. Honorable mention goes to CJ Stroud. I think CJ Stroud would have still had a solid, puncher's chance at this award if he didn't miss those couple games with a concussion, because he was a massive pickup at the quarterback position. He dropped a 40-point game earlier this year. He's been a monster.
Yeah, we talked about it at the beginning of the year, too, about how quarterbacks were being so highly valued. But we were still talking about how, there's still, you know, good value at quarterback. Well, not really. You know, there were not nearly as many slam dunk fantasy quarterbacks. So for Stroud to relatively quickly become a QB1 that you could plug in and confidently play regardless of matchup, yeah. I think the only reason why we're not giving him this award was that Puka was that good.
Well, and Puka came on again, like right as Stroud missed those games with that concussion. Like Puka put up one of his best games of the year a couple weeks ago in a week that Stroud missed. So it's kind of just got lapped. I mean, those two were very much competing Stroud, with each other.
And then Stroud probably specifically helped more teams that in terms of need, but sure. Puka was just simply the better performer.
You can't not give the award to the wide receiver five on the season that
insane.
You got that you got basically for free. Just absolutely
and,
wild.
In sitting here, FPS Gandhi points out that he thinks that Stroud is still going to win real life offensive rookie of the year, and I agree wholeheartedly. Just because as we know, the NFL is a QB award landscape. And he was still really, really good with the capital. Puka was great. Puka would deserve it very much. But if I had to bet, I would. Well, I can bet. Yay, degeneracy. Mm. But that I would bet that Stroud is still going to win that as well.
I think Stroud will win or lose that award this weekend versus the Colts, based on if they make the playoffs. And I know you don't believe that, based on what we're about to talk about, because of your two takes here side by side as we get into our playoff predictions. But let me take a look at what the FanDuel odds are on offensive
rookie
of the year now.
Yeah, I've got something up here. Let's see.
CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud still -850. Puka Nacua +450.
DraftKings has a -1200.
Oh my.
Puka
okay.
+450. You know, I don't hate throwing a few bucks on Puka. League. But
no, I mean, but it's like this late in the season, though, if the odds are that long, it's like, what is Puka has to go for probably 200 yards this weekend, and CJ Stroud needs to shit his pants. If the
even
odds
then,
are technically
I
are generally
think it's
not
probably
that
gonna
wrong.
Happen. Like,
odds are not that far off.
It's a
usually.
QB league, number two overall pick, played very, very well. I think he's surely gonna. But in terms of fantasy, when it's, total points that matter. Puka played every game this year. Stroud missed some time, and Puka has been just that value in such a huge field of wide receivers. To be the wide receiver five with Cooper Kupp is wild.
It's all right, Puka. It's all right. CJ Stroud can win the real rookie of the year. You get our off the bench fantasy rookie of the year, which means
please come
a
on
lot
our
more.
Show. It will immediately tank your fantasy value.
Oh no, that can't be our reputation. That can't be our reputation. Look, well, maybe next time we shouldn't get a 28-year-old running back. I mean, it's the most volatile position possible. I mean, Austin Eckler, amazing dude, but slightly higher likelihood for something like that to happen. All right. Next award, we've got the They Wrote Me Off Player of the Year. This is in homage to Geno Smith, Geno Smith, obviously nobody expected him to, have the season he had last year. And this player that Pat and I are each going to give separate awards to are fantasy players who their ranking, took a dip this year because people were expecting just not much from them, even though they've been good in the past. And those players said, hey, fuck you. Mine goes to Mike Evans. Mike Evans' ADP, let me pull it up really quick, was 76th on average, 76th overall pick, and Mike Evans finished as the wide receiver 7, averaging 17.3 PPR points per game, a revitalized season with Baker Mayfield at the helm, which did, taper off just a little bit at the end in favor of Chris Godwin, but last week against the Jags, week 16, went for 27.6. It was just this past week against the Saints, he went for 10. But look, Mike Evans and the Saints are like oil and water. They do not go together, and we know that at this point. Overall, yeah. Mike Evans had an incredible season. People were kind of just expecting him to keep trending down, at least from a fantasy perspective, as he gets older, and it simply did not happen.
And at least going back to our NFC South episode, preview episode that I listened to earlier, we really liked Chris Godwin because of the volume. Like, we didn't think that was going to be a crazy high-octane offense. Baker Mayfield probably wasn't going to be slinging it too much. Mike Evans makes a lot of his money, deep passes and touchdowns. Well, we were just kind of wrong about the Bucs in general. Was that one? Baker did finish the year, I believe, as the QB10, and that offense was just far more suitable for a guy like Mike Evans than we thought, and it still worked out. But Godwin, in the episode, I'm like, oh, Godwin at wide receiver 30 is a great value. Well, Godwin finishes wide receiver 32, so they had that. So they had that at about right. So yeah, I think people were just kind of favoring Godwin because of the circumstances, and people were just kind of wrong about the circumstances. But it was a good wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And a fun fact, Pat, I have it up right now. In PPR, Godwin is in fact wide receiver 30 exactly right
That's
now.
So hilarious.
Absolutely nailed that one. But Pat, I'm giving it to Mike Evans. It was between him and this one other guy. Go ahead and give yours out.
I'm going to go here with another guy who similarly, more so due to injury. You know, this is a guy that only played 10 games last year. He's missed not significant time, but it seems like every year he's good to miss some games, including this year he even missed some games. But still, on a points per game basis, this guy is the wide receiver 3. We just talked about how much this offense suffered, but there was one benefactor, and that is Keenan Allen, who, like I said, wide receiver 3 on a points per game basis. I believe wide receiver 6 total. So we saw, like, there was some weeks where, like, this guy was getting all the volume. Like, one of the better volume plays in the entire league. And Kellen Moore just loved to hammer this guy, obviously, with Mike Williams, you know, tearing his Achilles and Quentin Johnston having to return the home he bought his mother. He was so bad. And even guys like Gerald Everett being off the field a lot and Eckler not getting as many targets, just everything shifted right at Keenan Allen. And the injury concerns were somewhat fair. I mean, he has missed 4 games, which is somewhat significant there. But, you know, to have was this the best year of his career? No, he had one better year way back in 2017. So you look at a guy this old, like, it makes sense that we wrote him off. Like, I think, again, there's still going to be that injury concern. I don't think he's going to be drafted as the wide receiver 6 next year. I don't think he should be, at least. But you're still looking at a very good high-end wide receiver 2, and possibly better, depending on how health goes. Again, we'll see what happens with that Chargers offense, but presumably it'll, you know, Justin Herbert and him have that kind of connection. So, but I think Allen is obviously he did statistically have a better year than Mike Evans, but Evans just obviously played all the games and performed when it mattered.
And more important to me and why I gave it to Mike Evans is Keenan Allen's ADP on average was 41st, which still is a great ROI if you picked him. But Evans being drafted about 35 picks later and finishing just barely behind Keenan Allen and potentially ahead of him if Keenan Allen doesn't play this week, even though this week for fantasy doesn't really matter. That's why I went with Evans. But again, both Evans and Keenan Allen, sort of similar script for this year. It was just let's re-show everybody who we are. We are some of the best receivers in the league. And we are simply not dead yet. And our final award, waiver pickup of the year. I mean, Jesus
Who's
Christ.
Who's it going to be?
Pat, this is probably the best waiver claim ever. Like, as far as a player who is undrafted in every league before the season, or at least most leagues before the season, and that you can pick up, I can't think of anybody other than maybe Arian Foster in 2011 in the leagues where people didn't pick him. Like, Kyren Williams. I should say the name if you haven't already picked up on it. Kyren Williams. He finished as, what is it, RB5 in PPR leagues, 255 total points. The guy was just an absolute monster. Like, you just don't see this that often, that a guy who is sort of off everyone's radar becomes not only a workhorse back, Pat, but maybe the most workhorse back in the league. Like, it was rare to see this guy come off the field. And the only time he did was when he got hurt in the middle of the year and they had to go to the committee of Daryl Henderson and whoever the fuck. But
Royce Freeman,
it's just such a...
God, that feels like an eternity ago. I mean, granted, it was like 10 weeks ago. But
yeah, my Zach Evans agenda, when I was still pushing the Zach Evans agenda that simply never materialized. Dear. I'm going to keep doing it.
And, you know, obviously the only other guy that would kind of be in consideration for this, and we just talked about him, is Puka, who did finish with more fantasy points than him. But for a position like running back, especially when so many guys go zero RB, for you to be able to pluck a running back off waivers, once again, week one, right away, you saw that this was going to be Kyren Williams' offense. So to get that kind of value for the entire season, barring when he missed the games due to injury, at such an important position is just humongous. That vaults him way past what Puka did this year.
Yeah, in a normal year, the player that would win this kind of award would be like Jerome Ford, like a guy who steps in for, you know, a player that goes down for the year in Nick Chubb and puts up pretty good numbers with a couple duds here and there, but is overall a pretty solid player to keep in your lineup. Kyren Williams is genuinely a once in a decade, even more so type of pickup.
And it happened twice. Really? Yeah, like it happened at running. The fact that we had two guys who were just that incredible off waivers on the same goddamn team was just unbelievable. And again, it all just aligned perfectly that all indications were that Cam Akers was going to be the guy. Like, you know, at the end of last year, he was getting a ton of work. McVay's like, he's going to be one of the focal points of our offense. And then it's just like, nah.
Nah.
And there was a lot of talk of Kyren Williams last year kind of claiming that role that Akers had, and it never happened. So people were kind of just like, oh, yeah, this guy kind of just be a backup. But it's like, no. And now we're talking about Kyren Williams as a borderline first-round pick next year.
What a job. I mean, right now I fully expect him to be a first-round pick. It's just you look at all the pieces that had to fall in place for this to happen. Like, I think it made it extra unlikely that Kyren Williams wasn't a rookie this year. It's like, if he was going to have any sort of season like this, he would have at least gotten a few touches last year, right? And I think he dealt with injuries last year as well that may have prevented that.
He
had a
high ankle sprain. He missed like 10 weeks. He was out for a long time.
Yeah, so I think it was just we expected maybe to see something from him last year, even with that, and the fact that we didn't, he was off our radar. Nobody expected a season
like this.
I was
one of those guys last year that was holding on to him for dear life while he was still on IR, because they're saying like, oh, they loved Kyren Williams. Like, he looked great in the preseason. He was going to have a huge role week one before he sprained his ankle. And they were trotting out like Ronnie Rivers. This was still when the Cam Akers stuff was kind of happening. So it's like, this is going to happen. Like, Kyren Williams is going to win people leagues. And it didn't happen. And I think it just knocked him right out of the, you know, knocked him off the scent there where people were, he was not on people's radar too much. But again, for those of you that threw the dart at him, or, and again, in our instance, a guy in our league just picked him up like on the day
before kickoff, like an hour before.
Like, I don't know what voodoo magic Steve had. Steve, loyal listener to Off the Bench. Hi, Steve.
We're watching you, pal.
Like, I that makes it even more remarkable, because I'm thinking, I had the first waiver claim, so I'm like, oh, Kyren Williams, hell yeah. And then I look and I'm like, what the fuck? But I mean, I picked up Puka anyway. I probably needed Kyren more so than I did Puka. But again, just the fact that you had those options, and the fact that if you were sitting at number two on your waivers on week one, you were getting a stud, an absolute stud who finished top five at their position on the same team. Just incredible.
Most of your Kyren Williams-esque pickups turn out like Keaton Mitchell. Flat out. Like, that's usually what happens. Like, you have the hype behind this running back, and you'll see flashes, but they never really take the job, and maybe they'll take a few more carries as the season goes on, but you so rarely see a guy who is off every fantasy, not off their radar, but, you know, not super prominent on people's fantasy radars, and then suddenly get literally every touch in a great offense. Like,
he had a game where he did not leave the field. I believe he played every snap.
Well,
every running back snap, at least, excuse me.
That was when I started my Zach Evans agenda, because I was like, they can't keep running Kyren Williams literally every play. And they were like, watch us. I mean, they calmed down a little bit, Ronnie Rivers and whoever, but
Sean McVay, again, like, what's the saying? Like, when people tell you who they are, listen. We saw it with Todd Gurley for years. We saw it at the end of last year with Cam Akers getting 20-plus carries a game in the end of that year. Sean McVay, like, unless it's fucking Daryl Henderson off the street and Royce Freeman off the practice squad, if they have any kind of talent at running back, Sean McVay is fully okay with giving them literally 95%+ of the workload.
Yeah. Again, the range of outcomes for this to transpire, like, you time travel back to before the season started, and you look at, okay, this offense has Cam Akers in it as the lead back. It's got Matt Stafford, who we thought was maybe going to retire in the offseason because his back and head was so fucked up. And how is he going to be effective again? Instead, Matt Stafford looks as good as he ever has, which that alone is what sparked, I think, both Kyren and Puka. And so,
and, you know,
it's one of those things he didn't expect.
A solid year. Like, you were still feeling pretty good about starting Cooper Kupp in terms of value,
in the weeks he was out there. Yeah.
But here's one thing that I will say. Does this not feel like the situation where someone's going to get brought into that mix in the backfield in the offseason?
Yeah.
It happened this year. I'm forgetting, where it was like, oh yeah, this dude's going to be a stud. And then they brought someone else in, and then it was just like, I think it was like James Cook. It might have been like James Cook even. Nah, I think it was someone better. But that's beside the point. But like, this just screams like Kyren Williams, hey, first round pick, hey, and they bring in someone like I don't even know really who an example of like who they could
complimentary free agent back. Yeah, let's see if and a free agents NFL 2024.
Melvin
see
Gordon,
if there's any. Oh, shut the fuck up! He scored this week, which I'm pissed about.
So the Ravens. While you're looking at the Ravens, I believe all three of their running backs and Patrick Ricard all scored a touchdown in that game this week. The Ravens. We'll talk about the Ravens too, but God, they are so fucking fun.
All right, how's this, Pat? How about the Rams bring in DeAndre Swift? How about that?
Exactly.
How about we fuck everything up like
that's
that?
The kind of guy I'm talking about. A guy who's not gonna take the job outright. Like it'll still be like even Kyron Williams will still be 1A, but he's not one. Like I hope to God it doesn't happen, but that just like it just feels like it's too good to be true right now. I hope a lot of months from now, we're sitting here talking about Kyron Williams the way we're talking about him, of course, back in a strong offense.
Yeah, in my overly cautious approach to fantasy, Kyron Williams is a guy that as a first round pick scares the shit out of me. It's like my eyes see how great he's been this year, but it's like I love locking down the guys who I've seen do it several years in a row just to be sure. So it'll be very interesting. I do think he'll be a first round pick this year, upcoming year. I don't foresee myself right now being the guy that takes him, but hey, a lot of months left to go before we're having that exact discussion. But yes, Kyron Williams, waiver pickup of the year, honorable mention to his teammate Puka.
I mean, nothing crazy, but still 32 catches on 48 targets. That could also very well go up.
That's true. Yeah, that's not anything crazy from a receiving perspective. But yes, to recap our fantasy football awards, fantasy football MVP, Christian McCaffrey, bust of the year, I've got Travis Kelce, Pat's got Austin Eckler, friend of the show. Sorry, Austin.
Best, we love you.
Best draft value of the year, we agree, is Raheem Mostert. Rookie of the year, we agree, is Puka Nacua. They wrote me off player of the year, Mike Evans and Keenan Allen. And waiver pickup of the year is Kyron Williams. So, Pat, thinking back to before we, started the fantasy football season, and if somebody had shown me these awards, I'd be like, what in the fuck is wrong with you? First of all, who are two of these players you're even showing me, and what else is happening on this list? But that's the beauty of fantasy football, isn't it? There's so many things you just can't see coming, no matter how much research.
Got a man named Brandon Aubrey on this sheet right now.
We do. And I'll say this, Pat. This is my one closing thing as we get off the topic of Kyron and fantasy football awards. The first article or video that I see that says, this is next year's Kyron Williams, I'm going to hurl myself off a bridge. This is a type of player that pops up once every 10 to 15 years, like I said.
You're going to see it. I know. I'm thinking, who is it going to be? Like, I'm trying to think who. Well, who knows? We don't know what these backfields are going to.
It'll probably be some rookie that's yet to be drafted that has some sort of semi-viable path.
The Chargers don't bring back Eckler, and then they somehow give the keys to Josh Kelly for whatever fucking reason. Right. Whoever's backing him up is going to be this guy next year. But yeah, like
Isaiah Spiller season. It's Isaiah Spiller season.
This has been to have two. Just such rare occurrences with guys that were not drafted, and I would probably say 90% of leagues.
I can just see the clickbaity headlines now, and I'm like, there's not going to be one. It's just like when Cooper Kupp went for the Triple Crown after being like a fourth or fifth round pick. It was like, this year's Cooper Kupp. I'm like, it's no one. You're DJ not finding Moore. You're not finding the next Triple Crown receiver in the fourth or fifth round because these players don't come along that often. Try to find your values, but
strike twice.
No, it absolutely does not. All right, those are our fantasy football awards, but Pat, it's time to take some accountability and victory lap just a little bit with our best and worst takes of the season.
You know what sucks here? My bad takes were a lot more notable than my good ones. I'm listening to
these like mine were too, yeah.
I'm listening to some of our previews, and like there wasn't any where I was like, aha, aha. Like there's one here that I think is going to be my closest thing to a victory lap. But mostly there were just some where I just laughed, including one that we'll get to shortly.
Yeah, well, let's start with best takes. Let's get some positivity on here. The one player that I will say that I nailed for sure is Sam Laporta. The Sam Laporta train from the day he got drafted, just seeing the potential playing time he could have with Detroit. And obviously, I did not see tight end one on the season coming from him, but yeah. It was a player I liked a lot, and he just happened to have that 1% sort of outcome where he ended up being an absolute tank. So my support of Sam Laporta was definitely one of my best takes. My other, I would say, good takes are my general dislike for Travis Kelce and Derrick Henry as early picks. Again, people ask me about them, and I didn't firmly state, stay away from them completely, because they have been such productive players the last several seasons, but just guys that there were more red flags on in an early round pick than I would like to see because of age and what have you, and neither of them really returned. I know Derrick Henry, I think, still finished as, a top 10 back, I think.
Yes, actually, but I have it was...
It was through strange means.
You look at points per game, even that can be deceiving, just because Derrick Henry either had two touchdowns or literally had -8 rushing yards.
The lows were insane.
And for for a first round pick in a lot of leagues, that doesn't cut it. And again, it was the way that you probably lost matchups because of Derrick Henry. You probably lost more matchups because of Derrick Henry than you won. So,
yeah, definitely.
And I was in the same boat where he was just one of those guys where I was just kind of I didn't feel super strongly in either direction, but he was not a guy that I was considering drafting.
No.
Really, at any point, knowing in the first two rounds.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are some of my better takes on disliking players. And then one more here to throw in was my disdain for Alexander Mattison. And it's funny, Pat, because I know we had a show probably a month or so before draft season where we were talking about who's the king of kind of the dead zone running backs. And we both agreed that it was Alexander Mattison based on just potential workload, just the opportunity that he had. But then as we got closer to draft day, I started to sour on Mattison. I was like, I just don't think this dude's very good. And I feel like there's just as good of a chance that any of the other running backs in that backfield emerge over him. And truthfully, that barely happened until the last few weeks where Ty Chandler has come on. Instead, the Vikings just kept running Alexander Mattison, and he kept being bad. They even tried to bring Cam Akers in because he was so bad.
The funny thing, another take, obviously it's so funny, we went for, a couple months talking preseason before the season started. So some of our takes changed. I was listening, and you're like, man, I love Rashad White. You're like, Rashad White, hell yeah.
I wish I kept that one.
Everybody draft Sean Tucker at every possible opportunity. And then Rashad White ends up being the RB6 on the season.
Yeah.
So that one cracked me up a bit, because I forgot your initial admiration for Rashad White.
It's funny, because Sean Tucker was my Kyren Williams. The outcome I foresaw for him, and it played out for somebody else. Yeah, that's just how it goes with those mid-round running backs. I don't think that take was wrong necessarily from a process perspective. What happened in that Bucs backfield was they tried to give other guys opportunities. They tried to work in Sean Tucker and Keyshawn Vaughn, and it didn't work, and it left Rashad White to a workhorse role that he has mostly excelled in. That's a team that I do think will bring it back this offseason, just to get off track here for a little bit. But Pat, what were your best takes of the preseason?
Well, I mean, I think probably my best take was we did our bust draft, and my captain, we both had honorary captains, and mine was Davante Adams, much to the upsetment of myself. He was just someone that at his value I did not like at all, just because Derek Carr and Jimmy G were such drastically different quarterbacks in terms of the fact that they're both mid as fuck, but Carr at least loves to sling it, as opposed to Jimmy G, who probably literally cannot throw the balls, more than 15, 20 yards down the field. So I just thought with the changing of the guard and the kind of player Adams was, that, he was, I believe his ADP was wide receiver 6 on Fantasy Pros here, and I believe he finishes wide receiver 16, which isn't bad. Granted, that's a guy that you're starting most weeks, but for the value, some PPR leagues, he's going in the first round. It seemed like the red flags were there. And I don't think he was quite bad enough to be considered in the bust of the year candidates, but that was certainly the guy that I was turned off of, that, including Derrick Henry as well as another guy, but a couple guys that I liked, David Montgomery I didn't expect Jahmyr Gibbs to be in purgatory for the first, what, 5-6 weeks of the season. But for David Montgomery to be as good as he was, and for, you know, for it to be sustained, obviously much better in non-PPR formats, but whenever he was on the field, the dude was in the end zone. And then he just casually rips a 75-yard touchdown run 1 week. But the fact that they were both able to coexist, especially in an offense where he was clearly the significantly less talented running back, for him to be a weekly starter. Like, there was that 1 week, like, that you were saying Puka popped off. Like, I wouldn't have started Puka that week because David Montgomery, like, was that much of a lineup lock.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. That said, like, we'll see what's up with the Lions offense next year, but I'm a little scared for our boy David. And this one, I wasn't, like, all about him, but every time, at every opportunity, I mentioned Tank Dell's name. In our rookie draft, I mentioned him as an honorable mention when we talked about the Texans and our AFC South preview. I mentioned, like, hey, like, you know, CJ Stroud and Tank Dell seem to have a great connection, all this. Still couldn't have foreseen what happened. To a point where, once again, Tank Dell turned into a lineup lock and will be, you know, probably drafted as a top 24 wide receiver next year or very close to it. A guy that is drafted to be a starter on most teams. So Tank Dell, that's another one in terms of the guys I liked. The bad, good Lord. well, let's just put it this way. My Pats Pals team went 1-for-4. Basically, Tua was solid at one point, looking like the MVP. That also feels like an eternity ago. Tony Pollard was not it. And I know you also thought he was it. I loved him. He was probably my favorite player in, because I thought you were getting a workhorse RB1 and a great offense. And you were. But you were just getting one who kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate that, like, it's like, oh, give Pollard the year before, but like, give Pollard more carries. Zeke is dust and everything. And it's like, there was good reason behind why they were not doing that. And Mike McCarthy said he wanted to establish the run. Like, fuck, you are. Like, you're not you're not doing that. And then Chris Olave, I talked about him today. I said, wait, my hottest take of the year. Let's see if I was right.
What was your hottest take?
Obviously, circumstances were not what I thought they would be. Hang on a minute. My hottest take of the year.
I'm concerned about what Pat is what's he God. Cooking?
Oh, my take was slightly correct. I said Chris Olave would finish the year with more fantasy points than Garrett Wilson. And I mean, and he did. And I did say that, though, with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, though. That was the thing. So if Aaron Rodgers was healthy, I would have been wrong. I would have been very wrong. But like, I thought Chris Olave was going to finish the year as a wide receiver one. I thought him and Derek Carr were going to link up the same way that Davante Adams did. And we saw glimpses of that towards the end of the year, you know, around some injuries. But the first 10 weeks of the year, was there a guy more frustrating than Chris Olave? Probably not. And it was just the situation. But again, I think Derek Carr will be gone from New Orleans. And we'll see who's the quarterback there. We'll see who the head coach is there. Yeah. And but the talent is still clearly there. That was very frustrating to see Chris Olave. But and now this is just a bad take that was more so funny than anything. In our NFC South preview, we were talking about Drake London, and I'm like, I don't really love Drake London, but, you know, like, last year Marcus Mariota could not throw the ball. It seems like Desmond Ridder can at least throw the ball some. Like, I gave the guy like a 3 out of 10 praise, and it was still too fucking high. It was still too damn high. Like, it was giving that guy any ounce of praise this year was misguided.
I think that actually, that's, I guess, an honorary best take from me. It was about Ridder and the Falcons offense as a whole and Kyle Pitts, where I was like, don't automatically think Ritter's going to be better. I already made that mistake thinking Mariota would be better than Matt Ryan on the whole, and he wasn't. Don't think Ritter's going to be, and man, he fucking wasn't.
Not to get too far into this, but, like, God, I hope Arthur Smith gets fired, because that offense, with a good coach and a good quarterback in there, that offense can be so dynamic. You've got 3 top 10 picks. Skill position players, young, in that offense.
Yeah.
Bijan with London and Kyle Pitts within a good system, that could be a lethal offense in a potent fantasy offense. But I'm getting sidetracked.
We can only hope. Who knows who they're going to get in at quarterback there. Maybe Justin Fields. We'll see. My worst takes of the season, look, it starts first and foremost with CeeDee Lamb. I was not a CeeDee Lamb fan by any means, no stretch of the word, because of Mike McCarthy's overt desire to throw the ball less, which and light up the scoreboard less, according to him, which he did neither of those things. If anything, the Cowboys threw the ball, I think, more this year, and CeeDee Lamb proved to be, I'm not going to say the best receiver in football, but at least launched himself into a conversation where he could be one of the best receivers in football. He was right on the outside looking in, I think, heading into this year.
Oh yeah,
now he's firmly with Jefferson, Chase, where you don't sound crazy if you put him alongside those guys.
I'm still probably taking Jefferson before him in next year, but I would probably say Lamb is number two over Tyreek Hill, just because of the youth and what should be a good offense again in Dallas. But yeah, that was another one that I vividly remember you not liking him, and then me throughout the season just being like, damn, like,
yeah,
like, good, that one, good thing. But I also wasn't like huge on him. I didn't draft him at all, and I had picks in the late first round in several leagues, and I didn't draft him at all either. So no. I'm not quite as guilty, but I wasn't necessarily fighting you on that take.
Yeah, I wasn't so much don't draft CD at all. I was more so don't, like, think of him as this slam dunk elite receiver. And, God, I was wrong. I had the Cowboys very much backwards as well, because, yeah, I was also pro Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard was a guy who, Pat, in our league, I had planned to draft as sort of like an emergency pick at, what did I have, pick like 6 or 7 or something?
I believe so.
I was like, look, if somehow like all of the running backs I want aren't there, those at the time being Nick Chubb, Saquon Barkley, and then like the obvious top guys like McCaffrey and Eckler. I was like, if all those guys aren't there, because I'm not a Derrick Henry fan, I might go with Tony Pollard. And thank God it didn't come to that, even though it came to Nick Chubb, who ended up going down for the year. I digress. Tony Pollard just... I think the biggest thing with Tony Pollard was just that injury sapped him more than we expected it to. Like, he had all the opportunity this year, and he's in a great offense. It just, that explosiveness that we once saw is gone. And it's another thing, like, don't underrate things like that when they happen. Like, if a guy gets hurt, don't think that just because he's borderline guaranteed to be ready for the start of the season and be ready for the preseason means that he's going to be back to who he was before that, at least if it's a more complicated or less common surgery like the tightrope surgery that he had on his fractured leg. So, you know, it's tough with Tony Pollard. I hope he can get back some of that explosiveness. I don't know with that surgery how that stuff goes, if it's gone forever or what, but I think that was the biggest thing with Tony. And then the other thing that I was super wrong on, and thankfully I didn't get too much investment in this stat across my leagues, was Calvin Ridley and Trevor Lawrence. Calvin Ridley had me bamboozled. There's really no two ways about it. I mentioned it last week where I'm just not going to draft players who are have taken a year off from football, because I think just getting that timing back and shaking the rust off is not something you can do in the course of a preseason or even an entire single season. And Trevor Lawrence is a case of just, again, no matter how sure you are or how much you believe a player is going to take that step forward, you don't know for sure. Like, and if you can get a guy who is more of a guaranteed producer at a reasonable value, then do that. Obviously, if you've prioritized other positions and you get down to Lawrence, who's like QB7, whatever he was, you know, heading into the year, yeah, you have to take gambles. You're not going to get a guaranteed producer. But in my mind, Trevor Lawrence was like going to make that Burrow-esque leap, and it didn't happen. It hasn't happened, and now we're far enough into his career where it's valid to wonder if it's going to happen. So, I was definitely a little off on that stack in my excitement for it.
I loved the Jaguars, just the wrong ones. I mean, we were both kind of down on Travis Etienne. I remember saying Evan Engram was a solid tight end one, and he was, but we just kind of had it all mixed up. But I did love Christian Kirk, and he was clearly the guy to like before he died on the field.
So, got his dick kicked in or whatever the fuck injury
he
had.
Fuck happened, yeah.
But yeah, that's a little look back at our best and worst fantasy takes of the year. Pat, before we, you know, finish up here, because we are running long here, I guess that's what you expect here on an award show, but we'll talk about the playoffs and the scenarios that we've got coming up here. So who's going to make the playoffs? So in the NFC, the clinch teams are the 49ers, the Lions, the Cowboys, and the Rams, and the Eagles. So we've got two spots left open. And in the AFC, clinched are the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Browns, and the Dolphins. So we've got three spots left over there. We'll start in the NFC. I think the Seahawks and the Buccaneers are going to take these last two spots. It may be a little bit of a hot take because part of the scenario involved in this is I believe the Bears are going to beat the Packers this week. I think the Bears are going to play spoiler to their division foe. I think Justin Fields is going to keep trying to prove why the Bears should build around him. And I think they just, you know, with the Bears being eliminated from playoff contention, they are probably going to be playing pretty loose. And all they've got to do is play spoiler. That is their MO this upcoming week. And I foresee that happening, which would allow the Seahawks to make the playoffs if they beat the Arizona Cardinals, which I also believe will happen. And then as far as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, all they need to do is beat Carolina. The Bucs have looked fairly solid most of the year, and coming off this massive dud against the Saints, I am assuming there will be a level of bounce back that will at least allow them to beat the worst team in football this season. So I've got the Seahawks and the Bucs in the NFC.
I'm going with the most boring scenario, just in terms of the two teams that control their own destiny are going to control their destiny. The Bucs will easily beat the Panthers and win the South. And I do think the Packers will beat the Bears at home. You know, it made me scratch my head and think for a second, but Jordan Love has been playing really well. They just, you know, were off a monster performance that put them in this position. They very well could have laid an egg again, you know, last week or the other night, and still been in a position where they kind of were screwed. But they really showed out. So I would go with, I'm going to go the boring route, and but I didn't go the boring route so much in the AFC here, which, three spots available, but also we have an AFC East champion that needs to be crowned
That is true.
I'm going to create this challenge called Dolphins Beat a Team with a Winning Record Challenge. But I believe they are at home against Buffalo. But Buffalo has played really well, but I picked Miami to win the division in our division predictions, which was slightly bold. So I'll stick with our boys. But that said, Buffalo will still get in based on all the wild shenanigans. And I'm going to go the Jags to beat Tennessee, whether it's Will Levis or Ryan Tannehill. They'll secure the South. And I do have the Colts taking down the Texans here and probably being, besides the Browns, the most improbable playoff team here.
Disprobable team, yeah. I think that's fair. I'm going the other direction on Texans-Colts. I think the Texans are going to win that game. I've been pro-Texans all year. I think C.J. Stroud getting a game back where he didn't necessarily have to do a lot last week against Tennessee, I think he is going to play better this week against the Colts, and the Texans are going to get that, you know, super early ahead of schedule playoff berth, so I'm going to go with them. I also do think the Jags will beat the Titans, which will get the Jags in the playoffs. And then I think here's something that I've been debating, because you know, obviously there's questions on teams, how motivated they are to win this week because they have nothing to play for. And one of those teams is the Baltimore Ravens, who have locked up the number one seed. And what I've seen from folks is, you know, their motivation level is non-existent. They have nothing to play for. I look at it as, even if they do bench some of their starters, they are facing their division rival Steelers, knowing that the only chance the Steelers have to make the playoffs is if they beat the Ravens. The Ravens are going to be trying to win this game. Regardless of the personnel on the field, they're going to be trying to win this game.
And we've seen Snoop Huntley win some football games as well. So even if it is him out there, and like Justice Hill and Nelson Aguilar.
They have enough talent. They have enough talent with their backups.
They'll probably still figure it out there. But the Steelers are also just like, shocking that they're still in the hunt. And that's the Mike Tomlin way, but they are not very good. And if they make the playoffs, I think they are going to get destroyed.
Yeah, so I think the Ravens are going to beat the Steelers, which will get the Bills in even if they lose to Miami, which I am also picking to happen. So, look, we are, in my scenario at least, is a Steelers victory away from the Bills missing the playoffs. Because if the Steelers and Jags both win, if the Steelers and Jags both win, the Bills will not get in, which is firmly on the table here. I guess both crazy and not crazy to think about, because about a month back, it was very much in play for them to not make it, and then the Bills started playing pretty well, and now it's like, okay, we expect them to be in, but there's still a chance they don't get in. But yes, at the end of the day, that is who we got in the playoff. I've got Texans, Jags, and Bills rounding out the AFC, and Pat's got Jags, Colts, and Bills. I've got Seahawks, Bucks in the NFC, and he's got Bucks and Packers. So let's see how this final week of the regular season plays out. And yeah, man, I didn't realize the Dolphins really haven't beaten any team other than the Cowboys that have a winning record, I don't think, all season long.
Who also can't beat teams with winning records, so...
Yeah, that's true. There's just not a lot of teams with winning records. There's not a lot to go around. You know, you don't have a chance to challenge yourself all that often, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Hey, look, how many games have the 49ers beaten teams with winning records? Probably several, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, anyway, they only have a few losses. So, yeah.
That's true. Okay, this topic here, Pat, look, this is one of the results of us recording on the day that we do and only being once a week. It feels like this happened forever ago, and yet we didn't talk about it because it was a Wednesday news dump. Russell Wilson got benched and is expected to be cut. I didn't see this coming. Look, Russell Wilson's numbers look fairly good this year, but ultimately, he's not playing like lights out football. I didn't expect this to be a possibility because of the fact that both his numbers are okay and his contract is so monumental. Huge, I'm still huge. Shocked. I'm still shocked that they're going to eat, what, $39 million of dead cap just to have him not be on the team. That's crazy.
I don't think he was that bad. Yeah, I don't think he was that bad this year. Last year, he,
right.
You could have a whole, Russ could be dead cap for the entire cap last year. That's how bad he was.
Yeah.
But, Like you said, he wasn't terrible this year. He was last year, but I think at the end of the day, Sean Payton does not want him. He wants his to bring in his own quarterback, and especially at Russ's salary there, you're not going to be able to really build a great team around it. So even with the dead cap, you can bring in your own quarterback. And hell, look at Jared Stidham, man. That guy is
ruining not bad.
Lives out
he,
there, every- man. This is going to be the second year in a row he's going to inherit somewhat of a surprise benching back to back here.
Yeah, I mean, it borderline like identical scenarios. He takes over for a guy that the team is trying to ship out.
Imminent than this one. Yeah, this one was it was shock. The one last time was like more of like a shock, like wow, that really happened. It was more so like thinking they wouldn't do it, not that they shouldn't, as opposed to this where it was just like what. But I think is two guys here who are fans of teams that are both QB needy.
No, thank you.
I hope to fucking God I don't see Russell Wilson in Las Vegas next year.
Please no.
An upgrade from Jimmy Garoppolo and Aiden O'Connell, but that is not the direction I want them to go in. I think that would just be like the next step from Jimmy G, and I don't fuck with it.
I was trying to find teams that seemed like a potential fit for Russell Wilson as a starter, and knowing that the kind of, you know, there's been stuff that's leaked out about how he kind of handles himself behind the scenes and that he's just kind of a weird dude and not necessarily the best like locker room presence to have. So I'm thinking he's going to go to a team that is not necessarily the best run franchise out there that could use a quarterback. And Pat, you know where I settled on for now as a bridge quarterback? Atlanta Falcons. Yeah. I settled on the Falcons. It's the only one I looked at where I'm, because like I look at the Commanders and I'm like, okay, they don't want Sam Howell, but like Russell Wilson's not an upgrade over Sam Howell at this point. They're going to find somebody outside the organization, if anything, Jacoby if they Brissett. Want a new quarterback. Yeah, like even Jacoby Brissett, like rock with him. You look at all the other bad teams, like it's hard to identify a spot where Russell Wilson's going to slide in unless we have another sort of unexpected quarterback move with one of these teams. But I mean, Pittsburgh might have an opening with how bad Kenny Pickett's been, but I don't see an organization that has such a tight-knit culture like that going after a guy like Russell Wilson. Maybe I'm wrong, but to me, the only opening as we stand right now on January 2nd, obviously well before the offseason hits, is Atlanta. And it would just be, look, as a bridge QB, I get it. He's going to be better than Desmond Ridder. That one I can say, I think, with some level of confidence, he'll be better than Ridder as they try to acclimate in whatever player that they draft, if they do draft one this year, because they're not going to have a super high pick because their record is so mid. I think he could be a bridge quarterback between a guy like maybe they draft Penix. Who knows? So that's really my only landing spot right now. If you're a fan of a team, of any team, I can't imagine you're going to be thrilled if you bring this guy in. We'll finish out with a couple of viewer questions here real quick. I'm not even going to hit the sound because it's going to take too much time. What is Justin Fields' future? With the Bears locking up the number one pick, what do we think the Bears are going to do? I don't know, Pat. I think Justin Fields has played pretty well, but I think the smart move right now is probably to move on from him and draft Caleb Williams. I think – With Justin Fields, look, he's shown flashes. I think he can still be a good quarterback in this league. I just think Chicago finds themselves in a position that they can't pass up, which is you draft a quarterback that, unless he is completely incompetent, you know, his floor should be basically what Justin Fields has given you, albeit in different ways, you know, not so much on the ground, whatever it is. More importantly, you get that on a rookie deal. And I think that's the bigger thing here, is that Justin Fields, if you keep him, you have to decide whether you're paying him within a year. You draft Caleb Williams, you get to feel it out for 3 years and then figure it out. So I think that's just the best way to go about it.
And I think the reports of them giving Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles another chance kind of also points in that direction, that that's what they're going to do, because why would they give those two another chance if they were just going to keep Justin Fields and do the same thing? It seems very much that, like, hey, we're going to give you guys a shot with Caleb Williams and see what you guys can really do in building a team. And I do think that's a better move. And not to say Justin Fields is bad. I think Justin Fields is going to go somewhere.
I would love him on the Patriots. I would love
The Raiders. Oh, God. Like, I would love him on the Raiders. And I think, you know, people are saying that they could just keep Fields, trade the number one pick, and get a huge haul. You're not going to get that kind of haul for Justin Fields, but I still think you could get a reasonable haul. Like, this is a young player who's shown flashes, probably just needs to be well coached. Can you imagine, like, him in Atlanta? Woo! That would be a lot of fun. So that's the thing, but just to see the way the Bears have run, like, a change needs to be made, and if it's not going to be the coaching staff, it probably needs to be Justin Fields, and they have the opportunity to do it. Like, if they weren't sitting here with the first pick, I'd say hang on to Fields, but this specific situation where they can get Caleb Williams is what they need to do.
I would agree. And then, Pat, we'll finish off with this question. Who was the most underrated player from fantasy this year? This was one that it made me do a little dive, and to me, it was clear, because this was the one guy that I was shocked to see here. Jordan Love. Jordan Love is the QB5? Excuse me? Yeah. How the fuck did that happen? Jordan Love is a guy who got periodically started, you know, throughout a couple of hot streaks this year, it felt like, but he was never a guy that it felt like you were going to just lock and load and leave in your lineup all year. When you look at his game logs, he could have been. Like, he would have let you down, like, twice, maybe three times all year, but overall, he was damn good, and it manifested itself in him being QB5 on the season, and I don't see anybody talking about it. Like, people are starting to rumble a little about how he's been from a real life perspective, because he's like one of only three quarterbacks with 30 passing touchdowns this year, starting to get his flowers a little bit as he finishes the season hot. But from a fantasy perspective, I never really heard of this guy as a top option all year. Like, it was always fringe, like, pick him up off waivers, and yet here we are, he's QB5. That is
not, only is he was he a QB1, he was in the top five of all quarterbacks. It's wild. Yeah. I think that bodes well for the future. I think next year we're going to be talking about Jordan Love. Hopefully Christian Watson and Jaden Reed as very desirable fantasy assets. You probably have the right pick, but just for the sake of another player, I'm going to bring up Rashad White again. Because there were so many naysayers in the beginning of the season saying that, like,
let a naysayer know.
In like, his efficiency was very bad last year. I don't, you know, some of the naysaying was God damn it, you're get your Reese Davis ass out of here. It took me a second. Okay, so he had I can't say it now in any kind of good. Oh God, the doubters. They let the
good synonym.
The doubt was fair. It was fair because, you know, but the fact that not only was he a solid RB1, he was the RB6 on the season. And he was the lone workhorse back. And I don't think people are talking about it quite as good as he was. So, like, you're probably right, it's Jordan Love, but for the sake of a second player, I'll throw Rashad White in there.
I think that's totally fair. All right, folks, that will wrap up our slightly longer than normal fantasy football award show.
And it was too long. 2 minutes too fucking long.
Too damn long. You know, Pat, as far as next week, I mean, obviously we'll be previewing the playoffs, so that will certainly be, I think, the crux of our show. And then, you know, we'll figure out what to do with this show from a fantasy perspective, because we're not gonna be a ton to talk about as we go forward. But, you know, Black Monday is coming up. I think we're gonna have plenty to react to. It's gonna be the dead period.
Black Monday show, basically.
Yeah, right? Dead period will be, you know, I think a couple months from now. But for now, we'll have enough content, even if it's not fantasy centric. But guys, thank you for tuning in once again. We are off until next week. For Pat Gustafson, I'm Brandon Carney, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye bye.